Hi, all. These are generally conversations between adults after the children have left the table. The language can be spicy and the subjects can get saucy. So if you're ready, you are listening to The Southern Fork, a podcast that hosts kitchen chats with some of the most interesting people in the culinary South. I'm your host, Stephanie Burt, and I'm always hungry to learn more. Let's dig in. The Southern Fork is supported by the Great American Whiskey Fair, brought to you by Bourbon Columbia. Now in its fifth year in Columbia, South Carolina, the fair, with more than 500 whiskeys available for tasting, is one of the largest celebrations of American whiskey in the Southeast, and tickets are already on sale for this year's event on September 28th. This year, the event is promising to be even bigger, with a new exhibit space for whiskeys from Ireland, Scotland, Canada, and Japan. And there will be a barbecue feast by Bourbon and Loco Barbecue all day to keep bellies full. For more information and to purchase tickets before they're gone, visit experiencewhiskey.com. In the culinary world, many of the people making things and many of the people consuming things are chasing memory. It could be Granny's Sunday lunch, or a specific time or specific experience or place, but it's always a chase. Because food and beverage can't replicate memory. Nothing can. It can only be a doorway to an edge of something familiar you can't name. That's what Amaro is for me. Those bottles of bitter Italian liqueurs that once sat dusty at the back of a bar and are now one of the hottest categories in spirits. At its best, Amaro is weird in a wonderful way, and it reminds me of old dusty bookshops and overgrown gardens behind abandoned houses, deep corners and quiet places and faded photographs. The feeling of things I used to come across when I researched folklore and ghost stories. Somehow, this spirit triggers that for me, like an open switch, and Brutto Americano by St. George Spirits is one of my favorites. Lance Winters is the master distiller of St. George, and the man who created Brutto, and his inspiration was light years away from my experience. But still, like an artist and a patron, we met in the middle and had a great discussion during BevCon. If this is all a little too lofty and esoteric, then take heart. I misused the Italian plural of the spirit category immediately after Lance compliments me about it. We are chatting in a hotel room while his wife Ellie perches on the bed and listens in. And we share an Amaro, but it's in a coffee cup. It's a fancy, but not so fancy discussion about inspiration, creation, and appreciation. Welcome to the Southern Fork.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Thank you. I know that we're sitting once again in one of my favorite places to interview, which is someone else's hotel room. Actually, we should just ask you to say hello. You aren't going to weigh in, but Ellie, would you like to say hello?
Hi, everybody.
So I've heard you speak numerous occasions during BevCon. I had single malt. St. George single malt, which I didn't realize I would actually like single malt until today. Awesome. I mean, I've had it before, and I loved it, but I didn't understand it today. I was like, whoa, I want more of that. Too bad.
Someday.
I don't make those kinds of rates right now on the Southern Fork, but why did you decide to do things that were out of the norm for American distilling at the time you started distilling?
I like to do things out of the norm for everything that I do. You do things within the norm, it's a lot harder to be noticed. And I tend to be maybe, I guess, a little bit of a showboat, But I like to make things that have a little bit of a wow factor to mm-hmm. them. And if you're here and you just make mashed potatoes and gravy, it's hard to get people to say, wow, those are the best mashed potatoes and gravy, because everybody's got one. You do something that's a little bit more off the ranch, and there's a better chance for that wow factor. And I live by that. I grew up in a little town in the Bay Area called Fremont. It was a farming town when I grew up. And I hated that it was a farming town, because I was a kid who had no interest in any of that. Mm-hmm. It just made my town boring. my mom, who I love, hated to cook, and she didn't trust a vegetable if it hadn't spent a year or two in a can. No fresh vegetables. There was only one kind of lettuce, and that was iceberg. There was only two kinds of cheeses. One of them was individually wrapped. The other came in a green can. So it took a long time to really learn about food, but when I did, it came on strong. Mm-hmm. And I started to learn about all kinds of things. I ended up, after high school, joining the Navy and traveling a lot of Southeast Asia in the Navy. So I was introduced to a lot of really exotic things that way. And
so that's really when you started to build your palate.
I think I started to build it before, but had less access to things to really titillate myself. But I, as a kid, since my mom wouldn't cook, I think I was like 13 years old when I asked for a wok, mm-hmm. Which I don't think is a normal thing for a 13-year-old to ask for.
I took my beach money and bought balsamic vinegar. So I feel you. Yeah, right here. Yeah, high five.
There we go. Right. But as a young man, I imagine that in a lot of communities, I would be completely ostracized for asking for a wok.
Right.
But I still have that wok to this day.
Awesome.
Yeah. Very nicely seasoned at mm-hmm. this point. But I did love making things. And I think that's where it all started. I wanted to be able to make things. And if I was the right kind of crazy, I might have become a chef. Mm-hmm. But to be a chef, you're working at somebody else's schedule, somebody else's pace. And
it's hard. You work when everyone else is off.
Yeah.
Because you're literally serving them when they're not working.
And you bust ass. I have nothing. I call chefs crazy, but it's with love and respect, because mm-hmm. I couldn't do that. I could not do that. And so I make things sort of like a chef would, but they're things that I can put in bottle and say, you have this when you're ready.
I like that idea, because there is a culinary aspect to, I would say, most of St. George and your spirits. I would say
it's not exclusive to us, but
right,
but
definitely
thank
not.
You.
Yes, yeah. Of course. But, I had the Terroir Gin last night, and that was super fun. I hadn't had that before. I'd had a couple other beverages, so it was the best thing I'd ever damn had. Oh my God, it's so good.
Was that your first time having the Terroir Gin?
Yes.
Wow.
I know.
Welcome to the fold.
Thank you.
It's great to have you on board.
But it's interesting when you say that you wanted to do stuff that was out of the norm. Do you seek that, or do you intrinsically know when that is? Because I think those of us that are in this kind of space, it's like a gut thing. Like, you kind of know it when you see it or feel it, and you just get curious about it or something. Or did you have a plan in that world?
So thankfully, Ellie's going to be quiet right now, because if she wasn't going to be, as soon as you had said, did you have a plan, she would have laughed her ass off. I am a Gemini, and I do not plan. I am instinctive. I go by the gut on everything, and 92% of the time it works out. I speak from the heart, and sometimes I end up having to explain myself because I put my foot in my mouth. But I also shoot from the heart on all the products that we make. The most difficult part about that is that when you pour your heart into making a product, it is an act of extreme vulnerability.
Yes.
There are a lot of products that somebody puts out there, and it's a financial gamble. And if you lose some money, you lose some money. Mm-hmm. You can always find a way to make more money. But if you put something out there that you've thrown your heart into, and people stomp all over it.
They stomp it on your heart.
Yeah, and you've lost the money, and you've lost your pride.
Yes.
And so it's a big thing, but I think I've been really, really fortunate that a lot of the things that I think I've stepped outside of the realm of expectation for most people, we've been able to put out a lot of products that people really solidly enjoy. They're new for them. They're different for them. They're a little surprising, but they're enjoyable.
I would agree completely, but I'm already like preaching to the choir. You know, I'm in the fold already, the St. George fold. But this experimental thing, and I would say that you are in a lot of ways an experimental distillery. I want to talk about that just for a minute. Do you make things for your palate first and foremost, and then try to find others like me that will go for that? Or do you have an idea of what you want to make something for? You mentioned today the ramen with the Baller whiskey. That was a great story for me because that was an inspiration for making that whiskey.
Yeah. And so to go to that first, that was my inspiration. I knew what I would want to have with that bowl of ramen.
Right.
And so I created that. And then I have the hope that other people would embrace that same experience with their ramen. I have a luxury that a lot of other distillers don't. We have enough products that are going out into the world at this point that it takes care of our staff. It takes care of our rent.
That was the second question. So you're answering it. Yeah.
It's everything is taken care of at this point. So those experiments can happen very naturally. And all those products are things that have to satisfy me or Dave, who's second in command at the distillery. He has the latitude to create products as well. And it's us first.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with doing it the other way around, which is going sort of by focus group, is that it lacks that artistic integrity and it lacks the intensity of vision. And so a product leaves the house watered down. So we've never done one that way.
Right.
It's always been, I believe in this personally. And so when this leaves this place, this is coming from us. This is our product. This is St. George's product.
And we want to find these people that like this kind of thing.
Yeah, and hopefully there are a lot of people that like it. And maybe they don't like it on the first try. And it's a learning experience. You know, we're talking about products like bitter products, like Amari. Not everybody loves them the first whack.
But I get that question a lot because I've been in this world for a while. So one of the most exciting things for me is to taste something, some kind of combination or something that makes my brain work. It's like something I haven't had before, some combination of things. It's just weird. Like weird is a really great compliment.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, that's weird. And you know, you start
weird,
out with
weird
that.
Weird is a compliment of the highest.
So when you do that, I think a lot of people, I meet people and they won't even try something. They won't try something. There's a fear. I don't like it. So if you actually do take that step and you don't like it, how the hell do you try it again? And why would you? Because you're building your palate. You've built your palate. Why would you try something again? Just from you.
There's always the hope that, you know, so that one thing that you're trying is a complex composition. There are a lot of things going on in it. And hopefully there are enough that one of the elements of that composition resonated with
you. Oh, that's a good point. Yeah.
And that became the hook. And at that point, I want to try and decipher why all those other things that didn't really strike with me, why all those things are there.
So it's not just because someone, quote, quote, else told you that was good.
I can be a real jackass about that sort of thing. It doesn't matter what somebody else told me, unless it's my wife, Ellie. If she told me something, I will do it. I swear. Eventually. Again, that's... I have to qualify that statement, not the Ellie part, but if somebody who's a friend who has a palate that I trust says you really need to try this,
they know you.
Right. Well, and probably more importantly, I know them and I trust their palate.
Right.
They might not know my palate, but I've seen other things that they liked and I want to understand why they like it. We were at the presentation that Brad Thomas Parsons did this mm-hmm. morning. On did you go to the frat one?
I actually slept in.
Okay.
BTP. BTP, I love you so much. Hey.
But you know what? The sleep did you good. You look great.
Thank you.
I wish I would have slept in, but I also loved going to his presentation. And I love listening to him talk about all these different frenettes.
Right.
There are some that I tried multiple times on that lineup. There were 12 mm-hmm. different frenettes that he had. I tried them multiple times because I respect his palate. I respect his academic approach to all those products, and yes. I want to try and understand it. Spirits are a lot like books sometimes, and Amari are that way even more because they're more really? Complex. And there's some books that we try and read. It's like I'll read Cormac McCarthy, who is brilliant and beautiful, but he is granola for your brain. He is difficult to read. Mm-hmm. And I'll go back to him again and again. And sometimes I'll read the same page three times.
I love that. I'm going to steal that. It's going to be my new tattoo, something like that. I'm a major American Lit.
Yeah.
Masters in American Lit, you know, so that idea of that cerebral approach to figuring it out, and Amari in general are really complex. I mean, yeah. they're meant to be complex. They're meant to be indiscernible.
They're also intentionally meant to go against the grain of your physiology. The whole design of an Amaro is to be upsetting to your system. It's something that you are... Your first reaction physiologically is, I should not be drinking this. This is poisoning me.
Yes.
That's what
I think a lot of people have this face when I hand them something.
And they should.
Right. It's natural.
Yeah. The bulk of the bitter compounds found in nature are toxic.
Right.
And that's why your body reacts to them that way. And these are things that are intensely bitter but not toxic. To trick your body into feeling as though your body's poisoned. Mm-hmm. So, and I'm stealing from Brad at this point, but I'm not really stealing from him because this is universal information we've all said.
Yes,
so.
But you should probably get Brad's book, Amaro. Hey, Southern Fork listeners, you need that.
Get his book, Bitters, and then later on this year, get Distillery Cats, which yes. is his next book.
I'm wearing the button.
I have all the buttons in my back pocket right now because I'm not wearing my lanyard.
So. Oh, yes, yes, yes. Well, let's get into Bruto Americano. I believe that last year was the first time I had it, and Marshall introduced me to you guys at BevCon last year, and I had been a Fernet head until it was a very abusive lover. about 2013, 2014, we broke up. We got back together on Halloween. Then we broke up for good, you know.
So when you say for good, you guys aren't back together right now?
We occasionally hook up.
You get the Fernet booty call from time to time. Occasionally. And you pick up.
But it's more of the Minta booty call these days.
Okay.
Because the Bronca, I just don't know.
You're going for Bronca's sweeter, lighter cousin.
Yes. But I was so obsessed with that at the time because I'd never had anything like that. I've now become really a student of Amari. And I have ones for different times.
As well as of Italian grammar, apparently.
Oh, thank you. The plural of Amaro.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of people still don't get this. Like, in our world, we live in a bubble. We live in a very beautiful bubble. It's a wonderful bubble that we live in. But outside of the bubble, most Americans don't like the bitter palate. They don't check that. So when I first had Bruto, I think I dropped to my knees in prayer, maybe. But I look at a bar and I judge it, literally today. We judge it based on whether or not they have
Brutto no Brutto.
Yeah, Brutto no Brutto. And then I know what to order, and that's cool. That doesn't mean I don't like it. It's whatever.
No, no Brutto. I'm going to have a draft beer.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Brutto, we're ready. Yeah, let's do some. Let's look at the list. Yeah. Let's look at the list. But it has the ultimate explanation of what I try to explain to my friends who drink draft beer or only or don't drink or drink a glass of wine here and there is it tastes like funeral flowers in the most amazing way. So when I...
We're done here.
Is that horrible and bad?
No, it's not. What's horrible and bad is that I love that descriptor. So
it's my number one thing.
Awesome.
So I know when I find an Amari with that funeral flower, whatever that I say that is.
It's usually lilies that are the, you know, the flowers of death.
And also the chrysanthemum, yeah. I think, is also too. So I'd like to talk about like the flavor profile a little bit of that. It's on the continuum of bitter. It's on the more bitter, super bitter side. Yeah. I wouldn't say it's the most bitter that I've ever had. I think in some ways Campari can be more bitter than Brutto, but
it's sorry, but it's funny. I've there are people that I've put it in front of who are like, wow, it's like even more bitter than Campari, and I've heard other people say it's less so. I think it's a very personal experience for anybody, which I appreciate that aspect of it. Mm-hmm. It's something that everybody can interpret in their own way.
So let's talk about the lilies, the funeral flowers, because that's the way I try to explain it to others, but it's hard to explain, obviously.
Yeah, well, and there are...
Which is why it's so good.
There's nothing floral in there. Mm-hmm. The closest that we're going to come to floral in the perfume that's there is going to be the Seville orange. Mm-hmm. That's the bright component that's there. I think that there's an interface between the balsam fir, which provides a really soft, almost floral woodsiness, and the cascara, which is the buckthorn bark, that gives some really, really lovely warm notes. Those all come together. That, and I think when you think about funeral flowers, you think a little bit of decay.
Yes, that's why I'm saying funeral flowers, not just flowers. Yeah. It's so, on the edge of a decay, you don't want to say the word decay at a bar with your friend. Hey, drink this. It tastes like decay.
I wish we could get past all the negative connotations of things like that, because that they're much more apt descriptors.
Right.
And being able to go to those without having a negative connotation is an important thing. Mm-hmm. But between there's some resiny notes that are in there, which when you think of resin, to me, one of the places historically I go is the fact that resins were used in the embalming process for mummies. And
like myrrh is a resin.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
And there may or may not be myrrh in there. I'm not going to say.
Okay.
You've got these elements that are there that I can see why it's very reminiscent for you of those funeral flowers.
Mm-hmm.
For me, what I wanted it to be reminiscent of was a part of my youth that was right before my youth went off the rails, I guess. During the time that my parents were happy when I was a kid, they would burn incense in the house, and it would be either balsam fir sticks that had this great smell like a beautiful campfire, or sandalwood.
Right.
And
I love sandalwood.
I do too.
I love it.
It's warm and rich, slightly spicy, beautiful. When I first...
And there's multiple kinds of sandalwood, Egyptian versus Indian.
Yeah.
And
I don't use any of them. What I use is the California buckthorn bark, which has sandalwood notes to it without being sandalwood. It has cinnamon notes to it without being cinnamon. So it plays that role and pulls it even closer because of the fact that it's a California tree. And so it's part of my life in a lot of different ways. So, and that pulled together with the balsam fir, which was something that was, I remembered it from my youth, but it wasn't until actually 2 years ago, went to a friend's wedding up in Maine, And it was outdoors out in the countryside in Maine, Western Maine. And there are all kinds of balsam fir trees mm-hmm. around there. And mm-hmm. like, this place smells clean.
Yeah.
It smells beautiful.
Because those pine needles actually are intensely cleaning the air. I mean, they're made for that. Yes.
And it's so gorgeous. And mm-hmm. so being able to tie that part of my life into it as well was super valuable.
So that's so fun. That's very far away from funeral flowers. But
wedding trees.
Yeah. Wedding trees. But the idea of translating a scent memory into another sense, from scent to taste, mm-hmm. where taste is 75% scent, but you're moving that away. And it's also a memory that you're building that. So you have that incense, you have the fur, you have all these other things that you're layering on that.
The hardest thing a perfume maker can ever do is make a perfume that tastes good on the palate. I mean, perfumes are there to trick you. They're there to trick you into having a different emotional experience than you would ordinarily have. Mm-hmm. And usually it's for you to feel in love. Mm-hmm. Or very least to feel comfortable. And that's an amazing thing. And as distillers, we are descended from the same people that make perfume.
I love that.
So, mm-hmm. so you know, you think about where perfume came from. Mm-hmm. It came from the North African tradition of distilling, mm-hmm. of alchemy. And people were making distillates not to be able to drink, but to be able to make medicine. Medicine was perfume. Perfume was used to either enchant or to chase away foul spirits, that mm-hmm. sort of thing. And it wasn't until later on, when it was taken out of North Africa into Europe, that people started using it to make drink. But what we want to do is be able to reunite those two halves, so that you are having something that you can drink, but that also enchants.
So there's a magical thing. So I'm not mistaken in that with Amari. There's something very magical with the combination of herbs and absolutely. The scent, and after the meal, and or alone with Fernet, or, you know, whenever.
Yeah.
Okay, so you have a whiskey called Baller. So I can use this term. So, like, it's pretty ballsy to make an American Amaro after the crazy traditions. But you're one of the best in the United States doing that. I think I'm not the only person to say that. How did you say, I can add to that tradition? And also, for all the things that America is, no one would say that we're really magical. Except for California.
I don't want to say that we're magical. What I want to
but you know that idea.
I want to try and demonstrate it.
Right.
This was something that came up in the last session that we did, but it was like, if you have to say what you're doing, you're probably not doing it well.
Right, of course.
So.
But that idea of bringing something that is this storied beverage with crazy tradition into a place that is not that.
Well, I think that there's a certain sense of recklessness that we have at St. George Spirits, where we're willing to jump in and do things that we're really probably not supposed to do. And I think the more you... The less you think about what you're supposed to do, the more you're able to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't lock yourself down by thinking, oh, I really shouldn't be doing this, or I can't be doing that. Just do it.
Mm-hmm.
If it works, great. If it doesn't, well, try again harder next time. This was the Bruto Americano was a product of, at that point, about 3 years of work. It was playing around with all these different botanicals that, you know, we all walk through as kids or adults, walk through spice shops and are totally enchanted by the way they smell.
Yes.
And they take us to all these different places.
Yes.
And if you, instead of going through a whole spice shop, visit each one of those spices, herbs, whatever, individually, each one tells you a little bit part of a story. And then you can weave your own story from all those individual phrases.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we did over the course of those 3 years.
Well, I'm very thankful about that.
It's my pleasure. no story can exist without an audience.
That is very true. And next time you're sitting next to me at a bar and I'm drinking Brut Americano, Southern Fork listeners, please remember all of this when I slide it to you and say, it tastes like funeral flowers. That's the highest compliment ever. But if people want to learn more about St. George Spirits, you can go to thesouthernfork.com. We're going to have links there, also some images. You can see the man behind the voice that is this low, gravelly voice that is, yes, takes a bit of editing, but is going to be amazing when it's finished. If you like what you hear, I am so thrilled that I'm really thrilled, seriously, that I get to do this for a living every week. So please listen, subscribe, contact me, tell me what you like, and share with a friend, if not the podcast, then at least an Amari. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to The Southern Fork. I can't wait to bring you more culinary conversations, but in the meantime, I have one question. Are you going to eat all that?